The following audio is from The Village Church. More information about The Village Church is available at www.thevillagechurch.net.
How you guys doing? Good. All right, turn your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I love this time of year for several reasons. One, it's not 172 degrees outside, which is good. And I've already shown this in a few times that I've got to speak up here, a little bit of my redneck roots, right? And so I love this season for deer hunting. I'm just going to be honest with you. That's who I am, all right? I'm redneck. All right. But I also love this time of year for football. Like, I love football season. And I love football, watching peewee football, middle school football, high school football, which our teams here have done really well this year. So that's been fun. College football, pro football, it doesn't matter. Like, I just enjoy the game. I think it's a great game. And I was one of those guys. I was always too lanky to really play much football, but I could cheer with the best of them. Like, I was the guy with the body paint on and the big clown wig and that kind of stuff going on. Like, I got into that. I was voted, I can't remember in high school if I was voted most spirited or most spiritual. It's pretty much the same thing. But anyways, I was that guy. Like, I got all painted up. And matter of fact, some friends of mine posted a picture of me on Facebook, which I think should be illegal, of me in high school painted up for a game. And I was like, that's really wrong. I'm going to have to blow your house up or something. But anyways, but that was just me. I love that kind of stuff. And my wife was looking at it. My wife didn't know me when I was in high school. And she's looking at that going, yeah, you're pretty weird. Yeah. And so, but I haven't done that in a long time. Like, I don't just wake up in the morning and be like, you know what I need today? I need some body paint, right? I just don't do that very much. And so I've kind of grown out of that, so to speak, a little bit. But what I've noticed is that my passions have changed a little bit, right? I'm not so gung-ho that I want my high school team to win so bad that I'm willing to dress like that, go to a stadium, and scare people away. Like, I'm just, things have changed for me a little bit, all right? I've put away some of those youthful passions. And tonight in our text, in 2 Timothy 2, Paul calls for Timothy to put away youthful passions. And so that's where we're going tonight. 2 Timothy chapter 2, starting in verse 22, says, "So flee youthful passions." Now, before we go on, I think this is interesting that he's telling Timothy to do this. He's telling a guy who's not like 20 years old or 15 to flee youthful passions. At this point in time, when this letter was written, Timothy was about 37 to 42 years old. So he's an older guy, right? He's a man, okay? He's 40-something years old when this is going on. So why in the world would he tell him, hey, you need to flee youthful passions? Like, that's an interesting phrase. And I think that he gives him this admonition simply because this, it takes us longer to put these youthful things to death or to flee, to get them out of our life than we would normally think that they should go. Like, for me, and I'm going to be real transparent with you tonight. For me, growing up, I struggled with lust. I did. Sexual sin was always one of those things, those vices in my life, for whatever reason. Some of it may have just been that was just my lot, or some of it I just kind of got into myself. But that was just kind of what I got into. And so somehow, some way, and I don't know if this was some bad teaching or what this was, but in my mind, I always thought that one day when I got married, that struggle, that temptation would just vanish. Like it was magic or something. I didn't know what, you know, you walk down an aisle, you say a couple words, and all of a sudden you don't struggle anymore. I don't know where I got that from. I went to a decent church growing up, wasn't like jacked up or anything, but I don't know where I got this from. But anyways, I got married and I was like, oh my gosh, this girl's beautiful. I love her. This is going to be great. And I got into marriage and still struggled. Like, I still struggled with the same old things. And I remember later on, just reading a book by a guy named Steve Farrar, and it was called How to Ruin Your Life by 40, which is a terrible title for a book, but it's a great book. Great book. And he talks about different things that you can get into in your life, different sins that can really ruin your life before you even turn 40, before you even are halfway home, so to speak. And so he was saying, you know, there's certain things like you can get into financial trouble and have your life ruined by 40. You can get all these things. And I remember there was one chapter on sexual sin. He goes, you get into sexual sin and your life could be ruined by the time you get 40. And I remember for some reason, now he wasn't saying this, But for some reason, in my mind, in my heart, I was going, oh, okay, if I can just get to 40 or 50 years old, then I won't struggle with this anymore. Now, once again, he was not saying this. This is just me being a little slow, all right, a little slow to pick up on what the story's talking about. But I get this idea like, okay, if I can just get to 40 or 50, this thing's done with. I can just move on and I'll just be just a man on fire for the Lord, ready? Charging hell with a water pistol, that kind of fire, right? I was gung-ho about it. And I remember the day that I read that, and I get this thought in my mind, the day, literally that day, there was a guy, a pastor, I didn't know him, but I had heard of him, that was about 65 years old, and he fell into sexual sin, got into an affair at 65. And I was horrified. I was like, are you kidding? Is that some kind of cruel joke? At 65, I still won't have conquered this? Could possibly still be dealing with this sin, this struggle, this temptation? Like that just kind of discouraged me. I was like, well, geez, great. That's awesome. And this guy's supposedly a godly guy. He's preaching the word of God. He knows truth, and he falls into this? And so I think that's why Paul tells Timothy at 40-something years old, hey, flee youthful passions. Because the truth of the matter is, you don't just outgrow youthful passions. Right? You're not just going to simply grow out of these things that you've been messing with for all this time. You've got to flee these passions and crucify them and kill them. You've got to crucify these passions. So what are some of these passions? Now, normally in our mind, we connect passion with sex, but that's not just what this is talking about. And I'm going to give you a little bit of commentary on what this means. It means several things. The first one is this. It's the passion of pleasure. The passion of pleasure. Where are you finding your pleasure? And I'll give you a diagnostic question to answer. What do you run to when you're having a bad day or a bad life? Okay, when things aren't going well for you, what's your outlet? When stuff's wrong, when pressure, when you're being stressed, what is your outlet? Like for some people, it is sex or it is porn or something like that. But for some people, it's things like food that bring you comfort, that bring you some sort of peace. For some of us, it may even be shopping. And here we live in Dallas. Like, Dallas is known for shopping, right? I mean, you talk to anybody around that comes in, like, or you meet them on a plane or an airport somewhere. You're like, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Dallas. Oh, great shopping. I'm like, that's not cool. Like, I don't want to be known for great shopping, right? But I know I'm a guy, and that's, you know, whatever. My wife shops for me. Anyways, so, but is that your outlet? Like I know some people, that's what they do. Like, when they're being stressed, when they've had a bad day, they're like, all I need to do is go buy me a new pair of shoes or something like that. They want to go buy, like, that's going to ease some pain or make something, some kind of discomfort go away. What is that for you? If it's other than God, you're into self-gratification. If you're finding pleasure in something other than God, that's simply self-gratification. That's why God says that you should pursue Him as pleasure. Right? And for some of us, that's a weird concept that God could be our pleasure. Right? That seems strange that God could be our pleasure. God could be the thing that we run to for comfort, for peace, for joy. But that's exactly what we see in the scriptures. Like the psalmist in Psalm 73 says this, whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. I love that. Is that your heartbeat? That you're going, there's nothing on earth that I desire besides you. God, you are my pleasure. You are my joy. You are my comfort. Is God your pleasure? Is He who you run to when things get tough? The second thing is this. It's this idea of power. And in America, we love the idea of power. It's why we cheer on winning teams. We jump on the bandwagon. We want to associate our names with something successful, right? We love the idea of power. Is this your greatest desire, to build your own little kingdom or to have people think of you as being powerful? And on the flip side of that, is that your worst nightmare, that someone would see you as weak or someone would see you as foolish? Is that your worst nightmare? And so you built your whole life around this idea of I want to present myself as powerful, as strong, as wise, all these things. And what you've begun to do is you've begun to control and manipulate the people around you in order for you to look like that. And so maybe that's you putting others down so it can exalt you, right? And so you've got everybody around you kind of bowing down to you, and you've kind of crushed them under your thumb so that you can be higher and be more powerful than them. What does that look like for you? Like, are you so much to the point that you're going, hey, I would rather appear powerful to men than even be chosen by God? Because 1 Corinthians 1:1 talks real specifically that God chooses the weak, the foolish, the low, the despised, right? He gives grace to the humble. He resists the proud, James says. Is that really who we want to be, resisted by God? Proud, arrogant people that are about power. It's a facade. That's not real power. No matter what you can do in your life, the richest man in the world, the most powerful man in the world is really not even that powerful. Like, God could take his life in an instant. All right? The next thing is this, is the passion of possessions. As if we're chasing these things, as if they can actually bring us some kind of satisfaction. As if they can fulfill us in some way, shape, or form. And the problem is these things weren't made to. They weren't made to satisfy us like that. And all these things, the problem with all these things, whether it's pleasures or power or possessions, all these things are an affront to God, because God is all powerful, right? God is our greatest pleasure. God is our greatest possession. And so it's not only sinful for us to pursue these worldly passions, these youthful passions that Paul's talking about here, but it's also dangerous. Right? It's sinful, it's dangerous, and we've got to kill them. We can't buy into the lie that we're simply going to just outgrow these things. Because I promise you, those of us who in here who have these things, we've attached ourselves to these things maybe at a young age, that they've almost become second nature to us. Right? They've almost become our identity. Like, we've just done life with them for so long, and they've just been in our life that almost we associate ourselves with these things, with this power or these pleasures. Like, it's just kind of become who we are. And we can't just outgrow them. They're not just going to fall away as we get older and more mature. We've got to kill them. It's like the 50-year-old guy in here that's still struggling and looking at pornography of 20-year-old girls and wondering why he can't have a normal relationship with his 20-year-old daughter. All right? It's one of those things. It's not just going to outgrow. You've got to kill that sin, because the whole point of that sin is not just to entertain you for a season. That whole point of that sin is to lure you in. And like Jesus said about Satan in John 10:10, it's to steal, kill, and destroy your life. That's the goal of Satan, and that's the goal of sin in your life. I heard a really crazy story not too long ago from a couple that I was doing some premarital counseling with. And they had a friend, and they met this friend at a wedding, and she was kind of telling this story. And this girl had a pet snake, which that's one of my top rules. Like, don't ever, that was one of my top rules. Don't ever date a girl with a pet snake. That's just weird and scary. All right. But anyways, this girl had a pet snake, and she was telling the story. She was like, yeah, my snake got sick, and I had to take him to the vet. I didn't know what was wrong with him. And she was telling the vet, you know, my snake hasn't eaten in a long time, like in about a month or two. I don't really know what's wrong with my snake. And so the vet's listening to her, you know, and going, you're crazy. Okay, I'll write that down. But anyways, the girl's telling him all this stuff, and the vet says this. He goes, well, is there anything else abnormal that this snake's doing? So she thought for a little bit, and she was like, yeah, actually it is. There is something. She goes, I've had this snake since it was a baby, and it was like a boa or a python or something crazy, big, nasty, freaky snake. Anyway, she said, I had this snake since I was a baby, and I would, when it was a baby, I would sleep with it on my pillow. Yeah. She said, I would sleep with it on my pillow and said, be right here. But, you know, then I'd like roll over in the night and be all snake up in my hair. You know, it doesn't work well with the hair the next day. And so she said, as it got bigger, I moved it down and put it at the foot of my bed, and it would sleep down there. And so it's been sleeping down there for years. And so now, I mean, it's gotten really big, and it would just kind of stay down there. But she goes, recently, the last couple months, she goes, I don't know why it's doing this, but she goes, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and the snake will be stretched out along my side, like from my foot all the way up to my armpit. And the vet looked at her and he said, "Ma'am, you need to kill that snake immediately." And she's like, "Why? Not Snuggles. No, I don't want to kill, you know." I don't know if that was the snake's name, but anyways. He was like, "Yeah, you need to kill this snake immediately." And she's like, "Why? What's the problem?" He said, "That snake is measuring you to see how big it needs to get to eat you." Gosh. When I heard that story, I didn't sleep good for like 2 weeks. I'm sorry. All right? We'll pray a blessing over y'all before y'all leave tonight. Next week's lesson will be how to deal with fear. All right? We'll talk to Chandler about that. The whole point of that is that this snake, when she got it when she was young, it was small, right? She named it Snuggles or whatever, right? It was cute, if a snake can be cute, I don't know. But it was manageable. Does that make sense? And then as she had it and she continues to feed it and do all these things, the snake began to grow and grow and grow until it became unmanageable. Guys, listen. That is exactly how sin is in your lives and my life. Like Satan puts these things, and he has a scheme for every one of our lives, every one of us in here. He has a scheme to steal, kill, and destroy our lives. And so he's not just going to throw something huge on your plate. Like, you're not just going to go one day, look, I got a 12-foot boa. Awesome, right? I mean, he's going to put something small and discreet in your life and go, "Oh, this isn't that big of a deal." And you've kind of got this little pet sin on the side that you're just kind of feeding. Nobody knows about it. It's not bothering anybody. It's not hurting anybody. And you're justifying it like that. It's not bothering you. This doesn't affect anyone else. And it's really not affecting me. Matter of fact, I'm even growing really good at managing this. Like, I'm taking care of it. No, I mean, it's not getting out. It's not affecting my relationships or my dating or my marriage or my parenting. It's not affecting any of these other things. It's just this little pet sin that I just keep right here by my side, and it's not really affecting anybody. And all the while, that sin is growing and growing and growing and growing until it becomes unmanageable, and it's going to kill you. It's going to kill you. And so that's why I say we cannot just think that we're going to simply outgrow our sin. We've got to take it to the Lord every day. And so that struggle, that temptation that you have, you've got to run to the Lord and go, "God, I can't do this." Like for me growing up, and maybe this is just because I grew up in a very legalistic background, but for me growing up, I always thought, well, I want to show God how strong I can be for him. That's stupid. Okay, God's not impressed with how strong I can be. He's more impressed by how strong he is. And more than he wants me to flex my puny muscles in my life and show people what a good Christian I am and show people how I can resist temptation and resist sin and resist all these things. He's going, "No, I want to use you so I can flex my muscles." And see, God gets to do that when we take these sins, when we take these temptations, and we run to the cross and we go, "God, I can't do this any longer. This sin is killing me. It's eating me up inside. It's ruining this. Take it from me." And it's not just a one-time deal. It's not like you come down front and meet with a pastor at response time and you confess that sin. You're like, "Woo, done with that. All right, see you next week," and you're out. Like, it's one of those things you take back to him every day and you continue to give it over to the Lord every day. And maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day if needed. Some of us have had those days before. But that temptation is just continuing to knock on the door over and over and over. And you just go right back to the Lord, right back to the Lord and go, "God, I pray you'd kill this sin in me. I pray you'd kill this sin in me." Galatians 5:24 says, "Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." That's what we've got to do, is to crucify the passions and desires. I think too many of us in here wait until it's too late. Like, we don't want to, like, almost like God doesn't know, like he's not omniscient, knows all. We're like, "Ooh, I'm struggling with this. If I don't like pray out loud or think out loud, God won't hear me." And so we keep it in here as if to save God the trouble. And we wait until we're full blown into the sin till we finally start crying out. When it says, hey, crucify those passions, crucify those desires, those temptations, well before it gets to the point that you're full blown into sin and it's unmanageable. Guys, that's how God gets glory through this whole thing. It's like my son. My son, who's four, will bring stuff to me and go, Daddy, can you do this? Can you set this on the counter? Because I'm only like a foot tall and I can't reach the counter. Like I don't go, oh, Crew, seriously, grow up. No, I don't. Or when he says, hey, can you help me pick up this chair? The other day, I told him, I was like, hey, can you move a stool over to the counter and get some? And so he's like pushing in. He's scrawny like his daddy. And he's pushing that thing. And he's like, Dad, I can't get it over this thing. And he's like, will you help me? And I was like, yeah, I'll help you. And I picked that stool up. And I was like, ah! You know? Squat press that thing, you know? But he's like, Dad, you're so strong. It's like, mm-hmm. I sure am. You better believe it, foo. All right? So, yeah. But that glorifies my strength, right? Even though I'm really not that strong. That glorifies me. It's the same way with the Lord. When you go to the Lord and go, God, I can't handle this. He's not like, you again. When are you going to quit coming to me with these things? You know? He's going, no, I'm your Abba. I'm your daddy. I want to help you out with this. And it glorifies his strength. It glorifies his goodness. Quit playing with these youthful sins and quit thinking that you're just going to simply outgrow them. You're not going to outgrow them. You've got to kill them. All right, so what do we do with this? That was a lot of talking for four words. Okay, verse 22. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So he's saying, hey, you're going this way. You're pursuing these things. Repent. Make a 180 and start pursuing the Lord this way. Pursue these things. Pursue righteousness. And righteousness is simply this, just a right relationship with the Lord. A right relationship with the Lord. That you're in harmony with God's will and with God's mind. Like, pursue righteousness. This is a constant struggle for me. So many times I feel like God's telling me to go this way, and he's like, no, dumb, I'm over here. I'm over here. Like, and I'm like, oh, okay. And I have to shift my course a little bit, right? This is what righteousness, pursue righteousness, being in a right relationship with the Lord. And if you're like me, man, you're going to have days where you mess up and your attitude's wrong and your heart's off a little bit and you get jealous and you get this way and you get angry and all these. And so I'm constantly going, no, I've got to be right with the Lord. All right, be right with the Lord. And that's constantly just going back to him going, God, I'm sorry I was like this. It's foolish. Make me right with you. Put me in harmony with your mind and your will. I want to know your way. All right. Next thing is this. Pursue faith. And this is not just a saving faith, okay? Although if you don't know Christ in here, we invite you tonight to pursue a faith, to say, God, I want to know you. I want to have a relationship with you. But this is saying, hey, I want to believe God for more. I want to ask him for more. It's like the guy in Mark 9:39 who said, God, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. I think that so many of us in here, we're going, God, I believe in you, but my faith is not complete. There's so much of my faith lacking. Where are you trying to grow in your faith? All right? And then love for the brothers and sisters in Christ. Love for those outside the church. Love for your enemies. Love for all these people. And peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Like all these things you've heard before. You've been in church long enough, you've probably heard these things. But what's your action plan to pursue these things? Where are you going and going, hey, this is how I'm going to do this? Because I think far too many of us have come into this building and we come into this service and we're going, hey, I'm checking off this box. Like, I've come to church, I've attended church, and this is all the Jesus I really need for this week. And can I tell you, if this is all you're doing in your Christian walk, you're missing out. You're missing out. As good as our band is and as good as Chandler is every weekend and the guys that we have filling in for Chandler, we've got some awesome pastors that get to preach up here. I mean, as good as it is, you're missing out if this is all that is to your Christian life. If this is it, what's your action plan for growing and pursuing the Lord in righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart? Like, it's amazing to me because we're planners, right? We're planners. As Americans, we are. We've got things planned out. Like, we're planning. My kid's 4, and I'm already going, all right, how am I going to get that kid to college? Right, I need to start thinking about that, right? And my friends are like, whoa, he's 4. You're well behind, all right? You know, and so we've got all these things we're planning, all right? And we're going, okay, like, I need to go to college. I need to get this degree, and then I need to get this job, and then I need to marry this girl because she's really beautiful. I think she's cute, and she'll make me get beautiful kids. And we're planning all these things. Right, and even at work, we're going, okay, I need to get to this position, and I need to work for this, and do all these things. But what's your plan to grow and to pursue the Lord in righteousness, faith, love, and peace? Like, what's your plan to grow in love? Because this is an area we all struggle in right here. Like, there's not one of us in here that loves perfectly. I'll give you a perfect example. Like, my wife, like, I love her probably more than... Well, more than any person on the face of the earth apart from Christ. I love my wife that much. But I still screw things up with her every day. Like, she chews me out literally every day. And it's not because she's a mean woman, right? It's because I'm like, I blew that again. Yeah, I'm sorry. Right? And it's a good kind of chewing out, right? One of those healthy, good chewing outs, right? And I'm going, man, if I don't even love her right, and I love her a lot, how am I loving those who are not really in my circle? Or how am I loving those that I would really go, I struggle to love them? Like, am I asking God, change my heart. Help me to love her better. Help me to love this person better. Help me to love our church better and my students better. And all, help me to love people better. Like, have you ever asked the Lord and said, God, teach me how to love like you? Like, that's a really scary prayer, because he's going to bring the most annoying person into your life. And they're like, hey, will you disciple me? And I'm like, no, God, no, not him, no. Right? That's the kind of stuff that happens. The Lord's like, hey, you wanted to love like me? Well, that's how I love. Right? I loved, yet while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's the kind of love I love with. That's what God says to us. He goes, you want to love like me? Love the people that you would think are unlovable. Right? How are you growing in this idea of love? It's a heart change, and it can only be done by just going to the Lord and saying, God, please change my heart. Man, I am selfish. I am wicked. Help me to see this person as you see him. How are you growing in love? How are you growing in faith? How are you growing in faith? What's an area of your life right now that the Lord's asking you to step out in faith in? And are you being obedient with that? You see, in our culture, we want comfort. Right? That's why we live in the burbs. Right? We want comfort. We want everything to go well for us. We want everything kind of planned. Like, I was laughing about this year at Halloween, because when I was growing up, and maybe this is just because I was ghetto, but when I was growing up, like, I remember, like, at 7, my mom was like, get out the house, don't come back till dark, right? And we were just kind of running around the neighborhood, terrorizing people and that kind of stuff. And now, like, everything's controlled. I know it's a different generation, whatever. But anyways, everything's really controlled. Like kids have, like, 6 adults on them while they're walking down the street. We live in Flower Mound, right? I'm like, it's okay, right? Everything's controlled. There's a lot less kids trick-or-treating. And I was asking my neighbor, I was like, why do you think less kids trick-or-treat today? And they're like, oh, because everybody has at these parties where they can kind of control everything and nothing bad's going to happen. I was like, oh, so my parents didn't love me or what? You know, it's kind of what I'm getting at here. But everything's controlled, everything, and it's like we've gotten our lives so controlled with all these things and all these measures to protect us, which are great, but we've missed out on the opportunities to step out in faith. Like, in what area right now are you asking God to do the impossible in your life? Where is that? Where is that in our church where we're going, God, we don't know what to do here. You've got to move. Where are you asking God for miracles? When's the last time you asked God for a miracle? And you said, God, I want you to do something so amazing at my work or at my school or at wherever, in my neighborhood, in my home. God, I'm begging you to do a miracle. I'm trusting you to do it. Where are you stepping out in faith and growing in faith? Because, you know, that's how we grow in faith, right? We're like, God, please provide this next step. I'm going to take a step of faith. And we take that step of faith and God provides. And we're like, our faith meter just shoots up. And we're like, all right, that was cool. I like that. I'm going to do it again. Here we go. right? And then we keep going and keep taking steps of faith and watch God just flex his muscles and show his glory. Were you growing in faith? Guys, this is Christian maturity. This is Christian maturity, that you're dying to youthful passions and pursuing the Lord. This is it. Let's go to the next section. Verse 23, have nothing to do with foolish and ignorant controversies, for you know that they breed quarrels. And the Lord's servant, literally slave, okay, that's an interesting term that he's saying, hey, you're a slave. We'll come back to that. Must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, and correcting his opponents with gentleness. This is what the Lord's servant looks like. The Lord's servant, I love that, to slave. Like, how many of us really view ourselves and go, I'm a slave. I'm a slave to Christ. Like, we've almost lost that mental picture in our minds of what that truly means. A slave is somebody who doesn't really have a choice in the matter, right? You're just going to do what the Lord calls you to do. But it's evident that we don't view ourselves as that, because so many of the commandments in the Bible we simply view as suggestions from the Lord. Like, he's like, hey, love your enemies. Well, I mean, yeah, I'll love them from a distance. No. Love your enemies. Like, that means like Samaritan, good Samaritan kind of love. Like, go and take care of their well-being. Have compassion for them. Pity with action. That's what that means for you to do. And you're like, oh, well, I mean, that's good, Jesus. I'm glad you love those guys. But, you know, I mean, I kind of have my circle and, you know, we just do our own thing, right? That really doesn't mean to love your enemy. It means to favorably like them somewhat, right? But he's sent as the Lord's servant, like, you do what you've been commanded to do. If God calls you, hey, go share the gospel with your neighbor, then you go share the gospel with your neighbor, right? We just go, yes, Lord. That's the only answer. As the Lord's servant, must not be quarrelsome. Simply means that you're not out just looking for a fight. You're not just out looking for a fight, but be kind to everyone, able to teach. Now, this doesn't mean that, like, you have to be Matt Chandler kind of able to teach, right? We have one of those. We don't really need any more. But it does mean that you need to be able to effectively communicate the gospel. Can you communicate the gospel? Parents, can you communicate the gospel to your children? Can you guys communicate the gospel to your coworker? Can you teach the gospel? Can you show someone the ways of God? Can you do that? Able to teach, patiently enduring evil. I think this is interesting because he kind of sets that up, because the next chapter he says, all those who desire to live a godly life will be persecuted. That means us too. Like, if you're sitting here tonight and you go, hey, I desire to live a godly life. I want to please God. Then what's happening is you're going against the current. You're like what we were talking about a while ago, you're pursuing the Lord. You're going against the current, which means you're going to rub people the wrong way. There are going to be people at your work that hate you. Jesus said, don't be shocked when they hate you. They hated me first. But you patiently endure evil. You don't get stirred up. You don't go starting to fight or getting these huge arguments. You just patiently endure evil. It's tough. And I love this. Correcting his opponents with gentleness. I love apologetics. I really do. Apologetics is just simply being able to defend your faith. Like, I love that stuff that you can prove the historicity of Jesus and that there was an actual resurrection of Christ about 2,000 years ago. Like, I think that's amazing. And I think we should all be in that, be involved in that, learn that kind of stuff, be able to defend our faith somewhat. But if our attitude in defending our faith is not gentle, we're not going to win anybody. Like, we may win an argument and just totally crush somebody in the office that kind of has a different view than us, and we can put out more facts, or maybe we can persuasively speak better than they can, and we can just totally crush them. But if it's not done with gentleness, you may win the argument, you're not going to win them to Christ. Correcting their opponents with gentleness, that you speak the truth in love. This is what the Lord's servant is about. And why or how is the Lord's servant like this? check out the next couple of verses. That God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. Guys, listen. All of this is for the sake of the gospel. All of this. The Lord's servant is about the gospel because the Lord's servant, the Lord's slave, has been penetrated. Their heart has been penetrated by the gospel. I mean, from back up in the first part of verse 22, the reason that we flee from youthful passions is because we hate sin like Jesus hated sin. Jesus hated sin so much that he died for our sin that we could have a right relationship with him. Is that not amazing? And the Lord's servant hates sin so much because he sees Jesus hating sin. And so he goes, if Jesus hates sin, then I'm going to hate this sin too. Not the sinner, but the sin. I'm going to hate these things, these lusts, these passions, the passions of pleasure, the passions of power, the passions of possessions. I hate these things because they keep me from the Lord. They keep me from being holy like Christ has called me to be. It goes back to the gospel. And the Lord's servant pursues the things of God because he wants to please God. He pursues the things of God because of the gospel that's penetrated his heart so deeply. He's going, God, you have done such an amazing work in me. You have so transformed my heart and put a joy and a peace in my heart. Not made things easy, but you brought a joy and a peace to me so much to the point that I want to pursue you and love you with everything I am. And I want to live a life that pleases you. So I'll pursue the thing. I'll pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. It's back to the gospel. And the third thing, while we consider ourselves the Lord's slave, that we would do all these things, that we would be kind to others because God's called us to be kind, that we would teach the gospel, that we'd do the work of an evangelist like he's called us to do. Regardless of whether we feel gifted at doing evangelism or not, that we would go, hey, I've been called as the Lord's servant to go and make disciples of all nations. And so I'm going to do that because God has done such a work in me. He's penetrated my heart with the gospel. That's what the Lord's servant looks like. That's what the Lord's servant does. And so I simply have to ask you tonight, has the gospel penetrated your heart? Has the gospel so transformed and changed every part of your being that you're going, God, I consider myself a slave. With joy, I consider myself your slave. I'll do anything you say, and I'll hate sin, and I'll kill sin when it comes near me because you are better. You're better than sin. You're better than life. You are it. And I'll pursue you and find joy in you and peace and happiness and all these things because the gospel, we believe the gospel, and it's penetrated our hearts and penetrated our lives. Is your life that gospel-centered, that gospel-saturated? Has it penetrated your life to that point that you're going, I'll flee these things, I'll die to these things, I'll crucify these things, and I'll pursue the Lord? Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for your gospel and that it has that kind of transforming power. That we can truly crucify sin and be free from sin because of your gospel. I mean, that is evident in my life. As I look back on my life and I see the worldly, youthful passions that I used to run hard after, and I can see your work that you've done in my life, nothing that I've done, but just you, Jesus, it's been you. And so I pray for people in here today and tonight that may be discouraged and they're going, man, I have struggled with this for years and it has grown out of control. That tonight they would crucify it. That tomorrow they would crucify it and the next day they would crucify it and they'd begin to find victory over that temptation. Because you've done such an amazing work in their hearts and lives through the gospel. May we not think that we've moved on past some elementary truth that we teach in Kids Village and Little Village and middle school and high school ministry. But may for the rest of our lives we run back to the truth, the powerful truth of the gospel, to let it penetrate our lives, to permeate our lives and to change us. God, you're calling some of us to pursue you in different ways, and whether that's to love someone that we would deem unlovable or to step out in faith in an area of our lives, whatever it may be, Father, may we be found faithful to do that. God, bless this church. Bless us tonight with more of you. Help us somehow, some way, by your supernatural ability to communicate and to teach us the gospel so that we may be changed for Hera. We love you. In Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening to audio from the Village Church, located in Texas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about the Village Church, please visit us online at www.thevillagechurch.net.